The Outstation by William Somerset Maugham. The new assistant arrived in the afternoon. When the resident, Mr. Warburton, was told that the prahu was in sight, he put on his solar topi and went down to the landing stage. The guard, 8 little Dyak soldiers, stood to attention as he passed. He noted with satisfaction that their bearing was martial, their uniforms neat and clean, and their guns shining. They were a credit to him. From the landing stage, he watched the bend of the river round which, in a moment, the boat would sweep. He looked very smart in his spotless ducks and white shoes. He held under his arm a gold-headed Malacca cane, which had been given him by the Sultan of Perak. He awaited the newcomer with mingled feelings. There was more work in the district than one man could properly do, and during his periodical tours of the country under his charge, it had been inconvenient to leave the station in the hands of a native clerk. But he had been so long the only white man there that he could not face the arrival of another without misgiving. He was accustomed to loneliness. During the war, he had not seen an English face for 3 years, and once when he was instructed to put up in a four-station officer, he was seized with panic, so that when the stranger was due to arrive, having arranged everything for his reception, he wrote a note telling him he was obliged to go upriver, and fled. He remained away till he was informed by a messenger that his guest had left. Now the prahu appeared in the broad reach. It was manned by prisoners, Dyaks under various sentences, and a couple of warders were waiting on the landing stage to take them back to jail. They were sturdy fellows, used to the river, and they rowed with a powerful stroke. As the boat reached the side, a man got out from under the attap awning and stepped on shore. The guard presented arms.
"Here we are at last. By God, I'm as cramped as the devil. I've brought you your mail."
He spoke with exuberant joviality. Mr. Warburton politely held out his hand.
"Mr. Cooper, I presume?"
"That's right. Were you expecting anyone else?"
The question had a facetious intent, but the resident did not smile.
"My name is Warburton. I'll show you your quarters. They will bring your kit along."
He preceded Cooper along the narrow pathway, and they entered a compound in which stood a small bungalow.
"I've had it made as habitable as I could, but of course no one has lived in it for a good many years."
It was built on piles. It consisted of a long living room, which opened onto a broad veranda, and behind, on each side of a passage, were 2 bedrooms.
"This'll do me all right," said Cooper.
"I dare say you want to have a bath and a change. I shall be very much pleased if you'll dine with me tonight. Will 8 o'clock suit you?"
"Any old time will do for me."
The resident gave a polite but slightly disconcerted smile and withdrew. He returned to the fort where his own residence was. The impression which Alan Cooper had given him was not very favorable, but he was a fair man, and he knew that it was unjust to form an opinion on so brief a glimpse. Cooper seemed to be about 30. He was a tall, thin fellow, with a sallow face in which there was not a spot of color. It was a face all in one tone. He had a large, hooked nose and blue eyes. When, entering the bungalow, he had taken off his hat and flung it to a waiting boy, Mr. Warburton noticed that his large skull, covered with short brown hair, contrasted somewhat oddly with a weak, small chin. He was dressed in khaki shorts and a khaki shirt, but they were shabby and soiled, and his battered topi had not been cleaned for days. Mr. Warburton reflected that the young man had spent a week on a coasting steamer and had passed the last 48 hours lying in the bottom of a prahu.
"We'll see what he looks like when he comes in to dinner."